The topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio or its employees or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
Welcome to Let's Just Talk with Katherine Raker. Sponsored by
Buoyancy PR, Joni Sullivan Baker, Dan Perkins, author, Don Greco, novels, Drop It, Dr. James Butler, smile artist, Fame's Chocolates, JMR Productions, Songs and Stories for Soldiers, and Vital, Champions of Liberty.
You're listening to W4CY.
Hi, this is Katherine Raker of Let's Just Talk. You know, learn how to navigate your employer wellness resources. Workplace Wellbeing Professional, which is Laurie Mitchell, reviews top findings from new research and points listeners to resources for employer wellness. And that's such an important program. I want to welcome to our show. Our guest today is Laurie Mitchell, AVP of Global Wellbeing and Health of Unum. And recently, they did a research study earlier this year by the largest employee benefits company, Unum, found nearly half of their employees reported feeling mentally unwell in the previous year. Welcome to our show. Let's find out what's going on here. So, Laurie, tell me, this has been a challenging time for many workers with COVID-19 and other things. What did you hear from them in your most recent research, and how are they feeling about their mental health?
Yes. Hi, Katherine. Thank you for having me. And yes, this is certainly a challenging and disruptive time for many workers. And that's probably an understatement. You know, the pandemic has resulted in a total cultural shift in how we live, working and not working for some, parenting, schooling, disruption of our social lives and our connections with friends and family, and trying to navigate it all. It's tough. And even prior to all of this, this is when Unum fielded our specific consumer research in mid-March among 1,200 workers, and it was just as COVID was taking hold. But even then, we found that many were struggling. And as you mentioned, 49% of the respondents reported feeling mentally unwell in the previous year. And amongst them, over half took some time off from work because of it. And we also found that the numbers were even higher among our younger generation. So 65% of millennials and 74% of Gen Z said they had also struggled in the past year. But there is a little bit of good news in that.
Can I ask a question right then and there, okay, if you don't mind me interrupting you? Why were they – I mean, these are three different generations, right?
And 3 to 4, yeah.
3 to 4 generations, and is it? And we didn't even have the pandemic then.
What do you think caused?
And you know what? In the sense of the pandemic, you know, some good things have happened, haven't they? Because we're getting closer to each other as families, right?
That's for sure.
Well,
physically, right? Yeah.
And I had COVID-19. I do know what's going on, you know, in that sense. But, you know, I don't understand why and what were some of the reasons why they were mentally feeling bad the year before, because actually the year before was really a very exciting year because of money. Things were really good before the pandemic hit. So what did they be so depressed about? That's what I can't figure out.
In hindsight, right? Things were pretty good.
Really?
Well,
I know that sounds weird, but...
I think when you have a chance to reflect and look at what we're, you know, facing now and what we were facing pre-COVID, it was different. But I do think that people, you know, still struggled with stress and anxiety and, you know, I think we all know that the lines between work and our professional lives and our personal lives have gotten quite blurred. You know, there were still people who had financial concerns and financial stress pre-COVID. And then I think there was even then uncertainty about the future. And, you know, a lot of that has just been exacerbated now by the COVID pandemic.
Right. And I think, you know, a lot of the things that I feel were, this is not personally because I have children that are in that those age groups, okay?
And, yeah, me too.
And grandchildren. And I think to myself, you know, I really felt, and we talk a lot about this on our show, is that people weren't taking time to smell the roses. They weren't taking time, you know, to have a life. And a lot of them were social, you know, they have become socially inept in some respects, I think, because of the digital world. In other words, a lot of them didn't even talk to each other. They used their phones and texted and everything else. And how do you actually have a life?
Well, it's certainly different, right? And technology, and especially amongst the younger generation, is their primary source of communicating and texting or in-app chats. And it's not so much talking on the phone or necessarily meeting up. And there, you know, there's a lot, I think, that gets lost in that social media translation that does cause stress. And yes, if there are some, you know, pearls of goodness that are coming out of all of this, perhaps it is that understanding that there is a greater need to be personally connected in a way that perhaps social media doesn't allow. Although, you know, we're depending on it now more for work and, you know, family Zoom meetings. And
that's exciting because that's exciting, you know, Laurie, because we did a birthday party with all of my children. Mm. None of them live here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I think what my point was prior to that, right, a lot of people were distancing themselves. And I have a cooking show, and you're a dietitian, right? And you're a nutritionist.
Ooh, yes.
We,
yes.
You know, okay, so I do a healthy cooking show. And actually, you know, now that people are home, guess what they have to do? They have to cook.
You cook.
But they pour in.
Which is great.
Which is great. And, you know, I think that there are some real pearls here with, you know, it's like God just stopped everything and said, look, here it is. You're stuck. Get over it. And it's like, you know, I know that sounds weird, but what I'm saying is that we're learning how to survive. They've never had to do this. None of us have, right?
Yeah, and it's a totally different way. Yeah, kind of back to basics, right? There's a lot more cooking going on in my house. I've cracked open my cookbooks that I haven't looked at in forever, and my stepdaughter is doing some serious baking. So we have a lot of cookies and cakes around that, you know, we didn't. But
yeah, I know.
It's that part of it is nice, and it does connect us. And I think it does also support our, you know, emotional well-being. And, you know, when we get to the other side of this, hopefully we'll be able to maintain and sustain some of that goodness.
I think so, too. It also brings, you know, families together as far as playing games again or doing something that or exercising together. I mean, if we look out at all the videos and stuff, you see people that are actually trying to do something to stay active even.
Yeah.
And my granddaughter that's 9 and my daughter did a video of exercising.
And that's, it's great. And it's, you know, people are finding innovative and creative ways to connect and to engage and to take care of themselves. You know, whether you, I've certainly learned my way around my neighborhood better than ever and met new neighbors and seen new pets and new kids. And, you know, so there are these nice little bright spots that I think have come into our lives despite a lot of what we're seeing, you know, isn't so great. So people are adapting, and that's great. We are an adaptable species, which is a good thing.
That's right. And, you know, I think employers, as we go back to work, will start in, you know, putting these different things into, because they're off too, a lot of them. So it's mm-hmm. just changed a lot. Where can we get all the information from the study, right, in some of the points that you brought up today? Because these are important. Your mental health is really important in anything that you do, any job that you have. So maybe that these three generations will come around and they'll see that, you know, some of the depression, maybe from bullying, a lot of other things could be in there too, that it's all right. You will get hip ups and downs, correct?
Yes. I mean, that's normal. I think what is important for people to keep in mind is that, yes, of course, we all have emotional ups and downs, and, you know, it varies in to degrees for people, but there are resources to help. It's important to get help and not wait your way out of it. So it's a good time to look at the resources you have available to you, whether they're through your employer, so say through an employee assistance program that offers free counseling, free referral to resources. There you could access some app-based solutions like Headspace or Sanvelo, so that you can have some more self-directed anytime support for your emotional well-being. And then there are all the physical well-being apps that are out there too. So, you know, we want people to pay attention to that, not just during Mental Health Awareness Month, but year-round, and recognize that there are resources to help, and getting help is important, and asking for help. You might not know where to go, but so ask somebody is really very, very important.
And can you give your website, please?
Yes, I can. So it's unum.com/workwell. So that's unum.com/workwell.
I can't thank you enough for joining us today on Catherine Raker's Let's Just Talk. And don't forget to go to letsjusttalkradio.com. Thank you so much for the mission that you have. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Catherine will be right back. You're listening to Let's Just Talk on W4CY.
Buoyancy PR, telling your story, keeping your message afloat. Okay, enough about us. Let's talk about you. You have a great story to tell, whether it's a product, a new book, or a worthy cause. You have a message worth hearing. Buoyancy PR will help you fine-tune that message and get it over the sea of information. Who, what, where, when, how, and why. These classic questions of a news story will introduce you to Buoyancy PR. After you've had a chance to get acquainted, let us know what we can do for you. For more information, contact Joni Sullivan Baker at 513-319-3231 or go to buoyancypr.com.
Hi, this is Karen Sokolov-Javich, and I just became a grandma and wrote 17 songs for my new babies.
Splishy, splashy in the bathy. Splishy, splashy in the tub.
Share my smiling splishy, baby song album with your little ones.
You've got 10 fingers and...
Order my baby album and you'll receive my children's album for free. Just call JMR Productions at 402-393-3893 for your special gift. That's 402-393-3893.
Hi, this is Catherine Raker of Let's Just Talk. Do you want to read wonderful novels about historic, wonderful places in Youngstown, Ohio? Then you need to get Don Greco's books. He's a wonderful author that wrote the series, The Youngstown Quintet. His latest book is The Maladrin. And the nice thing about his books are they're not about spies. They're not about zombies. They're just ordinary people that read that have extraordinary lives. So visit DonGrecoNovels.com or go buy his books on Amazon.com.
This is Dan Perkins for Songs and Stories for Soldiers with your Veterans Tip of the Day. Did you know that May is Mental Health Awareness Month? And the VA, along with Prevents, is calling for you to help inspire a national challenge. Here's your Veterans Tip of the Day. Post a photograph or video on your social media channels of what you are doing to take care of yours and your fellow veterans' emotional well-being. Show us what works for you. It might be yoga, painting, running, singing, video chatting with loved ones, walking your dog, baking cookies, movie time with your family. One size does not fit all, but we all need to practice things that helps maintain good mental health during this challenging time. Be creative, serious, funny, or touching. Hashtag more than ever before, and challenge your friends, colleagues, and family members to join the challenge. This has been your Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Veterans Tip of the Day.
We're back. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker on W4CY.
Hi, this is Catherine Raker of Let's Just Talk, and our guest today is one of my favorite guests, and that's Alan Topol. He's a national best-selling author of how many novels? 14, 15, 16?
This will be my 16th, Catherine.
16th. Novels of international intrigue, including so many. The Washington Lawyer, that was the last one, right?
Yep, and The Washington Operator, yep.
Operator, not lawyer, Washington Operator.
We had The Washington Lawyer. You and I talked about that one a couple years ago. We had a great discussion. I love talking with you, Catherine. We always have a good exchange.
And you've won two different awards from Let's Just Talk Radio and TV. And we did a television show last year, Last October we did in D.C., and it's up on our Catherine Raker YouTube, and it's been on all of our stations. So anytime you get a new book, I have to have it because I'm really into your political thrillers because I cover politics and all that kind of good stuff anyhow. So it makes it even more exciting. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. You and I always love to talk about Washington politics, Scott. We'll be looking forward to having you back again, but unfortunately not now.
Well, as soon as they open it up, actually, Dr. Scott McGill is going to have another Champions of Liberty, and I have to announce this to you. I'm now the head of the Associates Program. So if you're a veteran and maybe you're a veteran that's a female or a male, your husband or wife can come and can join the associate membership, and it's a wonderful week-long event. And I actually got off a plane, met you, did a TV interview with you the last time we saw each other, right?
And I was thrilled to get the award, your award for my book. I just absolutely thrilled, Catherine, for my last book.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I have to announce this to you today. We have 5 new radio stations that are part of us today. And another 6th one will be coming on pretty shortly. So we're pretty excited. But let's talk about the book. And let's talk about why the name of the book is called The French Revenge. Am I right?
Yes, you are absolutely correct, The French Revenge.
And there's a lot of, you know, a lot going on with France right now, or has been in the past, and also Russia. So tell me, how long did it take you to write this book, number one?
Well, I've been bringing out books, Catherine, and about one book a year, and I've been bringing them out about every spring because people seem to want them then, and I get a lot of response, when's your next book coming out? So it's about a one-year process. But the ideas run around for a while in my head, and I do a lot of research in these international places, and the research is done earlier, and then the ideas kind of germinate in my mind, and then when I'm finally off and running, it goes pretty fast.
It goes really fast. I told you on the phone I'm in the second book with one of the characters in my book that's real, and we're on chapter 10. Of the book, and I think there's maybe 14 or 15 chapters altogether because mine are a little series, right? So tell me, this book is a novel that has two pressing topics in the book, and the first one of them involves a relationship between the U.S. president and their top advisors. So let's talk about that.
Sure, absolutely. And you know, as we do, I have to begin by prefacing by saying is that the topics that we're going to talk about are important background, but my main goal is to write an entertaining story that's going to keep a reader turning pages and expose them to lots of international locales like Milan and Paris. So that's the first goal. But then I want them to take away something from the book and say, gee, I learned something, or it made me think about. And that's one of the issues. The first one that you put your finger on is relationship between American presidents and their top advisors. Because, and this is not, I don't mean this to be specific to any administration, to Trump, to Obama, to anybody. This is sort of a general universal issue as to how we run the American government, because our executive has more and more power, and the president's advisors are not elected by anybody. They're not even approved by the Senate. They're simply appointed by the president to be his advisors. This always has been the case, Franklin Roosevelt, Woodrow Wilson, any American president. And yet these people have enormous power, these unelected people, enormous power in shaping the course of the U.S. government. And I want to kind of zero in on that in this book, because one of my characters, General Tyler, who's the president's advisor on national security affairs, he is hell-bent for reasons of a personal vendetta to plan the assassination of the Russian president. And that's a major undertaking. And here he's scheming and doing it while he has his cover in the White House. So that's the topic that bounces around in this book, Catherine.
Wow. And we've seen a few movies out there where they actually try to kill the president, you know, or whatever. But turning it around and making it the Russian one, that's even better.
Yeah, it is. That's why the book is called The French Revenge, because General Tyler has his own reasons to want to get revenge against Russian President Volkov. And I don't want to give away too much of the plot, but let's just say he has a personal reason that he wants to gain his revenge against the Russian president, something that happened in France, which is called the French Revenge, when he was a member of the U.S. military serving in France. And it's that personal vendetta that he carried forward that makes him want to shape the president's policy. And that's another point that the book makes, is that when people come to high office in Washington, these unelected people, they bring with them their own personal biases, their own personal vendettas. And it's kind of a scary thing if you think about the amount of power.
Right now? What's going on right now when you think about it? Are you going to write a book about this? I hope so. I don't think anybody could have ever thought that this could be as widespread as it was. Right?
You mean the coronavirus? I mean, absolutely
right. No, not
the
coronavirus. I'm talking about what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now by the Democrats against the Republicans.
Oh, my God. It's absolutely. I've been, as you know, I have been in Washington for a long time. I don't want to give away many decades, and I've been a partner in one of the most prestigious Washington law firms. And I've never seen a time when the personal animosities have been so great, when leading to total dysfunction in the U.S. government, so that whenever one party says black, the other party says white. I mean, it just doesn't matter. They can't work together or agree on anything, and the American people are really end up losing. I mean, I remember a long time ago, and you remember too, I'm sure, when I grew up in Pennsylvania, and we had a Republican, one Republican senator and one Democrat when I was growing up, Hugh Scott and Clark, and they had a weekly radio, now television show, I guess, and they came together and they talked amicably and tried to work things out. But now, my goodness, nobody works out anything. I mean, you probably remember at a younger period when there was a lot more civility and a lot less hostility.
I've never seen anything in my 75 years of age. Don't act it, looked at her, whatever, have ever yep. seen anything quite like this in my life, ever.
I totally agree, and I have only 3 years on you, but I've never seen it either.
Whatever.
I mean, it's just, but whatever. But seriously, it is. And so and that's kind of at the heart of the book. And it really is an unfortunate situation because it's not doing anybody any good. It's not doing the parties any good. It's certainly not doing the American people any good. And it's very upsetting.
Well, I think part of it is Americans are standing up and saying, look, you're not going to change my life in the sense of what you're doing to us at this point. And I'll tell you what, not one American would want the Green Deal. Because if you go to the Green Deal, you'll never be flying anywhere. You might as well just destroy the whole American scene, totally. Okay, and that's all I'll say about it. But because it's a joke. I mean, what they want is a joke. It's turning back into the 18th century. I mean, I can't even believe that there are people out there that are in certain parties that really think that that's a smart situation. It's not at all. And we're not going to pay for it. I'm not going to pay for it. Are you going to pay for it? No.
Right.
And that's what they tend to forget, that they work for us, okay? They're getting paid with our tax dollars and everything else, and that's what they are not thinking about, unfortunately.
Right.
And I'm being nice about it. But anyhow, this book sounds so exciting. Tell me a little bit more about the characters and who they are.
Sure.
Besides this one general. Go ahead.
Besides General Tyler, sure. At the heart of the book is my protagonist, my hero, is a former U.S. Congressman, Anthony Ferrari. And he has left Washington. He's a retired congressman. He decided he couldn't take any more of the dysfunction. And so he left, and he has moved to Italy because he has fallen in love with a woman by the name of Chiara Moretti, who is a world-class pianist, one of the top piano players in the world. And so she is based and lives in Milan. She's Italian. Ferrari, his own personal background, although he was born in the U.S., his ethnic makeup is Italian. And so he has moved to Milan to be with her. He got tired of Washington dysfunction. And at the beginning of the book, Anthony and Chiara are running on a beach in Corsica. They're on vacation, this marvelous island of Corsica. And she's shot. And he sets in motion. She's not killed, but she's seriously wounded. And that sets in motion the action of the book. So the two lead characters are Anthony and Chiara, and I like them a lot. This is the first time I've used either of these characters. I often repeat characters, but I decided to create two new ones. First of all, the whole piano, classical pianist thing really interested me, that how those people can perform and the life they have. That was intriguing, and I wanted to work that into a book. And the idea of Anthony, who had enough of politics and Washington dysfunction, wanted to create a new life for himself in Italy. And it let me explore in the book and set scenes in Italy, particularly in Milan, which I have come to really like. So those two are at the heart of the novel, Catherine.
And, you know, that's so important to have new characters or bring a character back, right? And
yeah.
I love that, because people that love your novels are always looking forward to the next one. Do you, in your novels, and I forget because I don't have one right in front of me right now, but do you put, it's not a continuing series, it's it's always a different book, but you may have the same characters. Do you ever write a teaser page or a situation where they know what you're going to do next? Maybe the next two or three pages?
There's some of them. No, that's a great question. What I did, and I did a little bit of that because I had a character, Craig Page, and I put Craig in six novels, and they were terrific, and I really liked Craig, and I liked Elizabeth Crowder, the woman that Craig was teamed up with. But but I felt, gee, after six times, and people said to me, when's the next Craig Page novel coming out? And I said, well, I'd like to try a different character. And so I went into a novel with the book Kelly Cameron, that's the Washington lawyer, and the Washington power play. And so I decided, gee whiz, I want to go in a slightly different direction. And it was more of a challenge then to bring in a different character and to do that with a different character. And so I've done it both ways, but it keeps you fresher as a writer to, after you've done several books with a character, to move in a different direction. And that's a challenge, and I like doing that.
Right, and I think it makes it so you don't do any co-authoring. You're the author, whereas I co-author right with someone else. And I actually love the second author that I'm working with because she's British, and she's actually one of the characters in my book. So it made it exciting to write this, and we're doing a lot of historical characters in this next book. But, you know, doing the research on it is exciting. I'm a young writer, you know that.
Right. So you're absolutely different. Right. Yes, you know? The research is so exciting and so much fun, and it really is, particularly if you're doing international locales and kind of places to travel to, because it really makes it nice. You visit the places, you try to get a feel for it, you talk to people, and then you want to put these international locales. In this case, it's a lot of Milan and Paris and this marvelous island of Corsica, which a lot of people are not familiar with. And also he goes to Anthony goes to Sardinia, and I love these places in the Caribbean, I mean in the Mediterranean. And so people, when they read the book, they say to me, gee, I went to Sardinia, I went to Corsica, I went to Milan, and I really felt as if I was reliving my trip when I read your book. And that's terrific. And then I've had other people who say, gee, I've never been to Corsica, or I've never been to Sardinia, but your book makes me want to take a trip there. And so
and
these international
note,
locales
need to take a short
are lots
break.
Of fun.
I said, on that note, we need to take a short break. And
sure.
We'll be, yeah, we do. We do. So we have Alan Topol, best-selling author, Washington lawyer himself. And give your website real quick because I've got to take the break.
Yep, www.alantopol.com, alantopol.com, and you can get The French Revenge on Amazon, paper or Kindle.
All right, and we'll be right back on Catherine Raker's Let's Just Talk.
Catherine, we'll be right back. You're listening to Let's Just Talk on W4CY.
iMarketing.com provides easily editable websites to small business owners. And if they don't want to make the changes to the site themselves, they can simply email the changes to iMarketing.com and they'll take care of it for no additional cost. iMarketing.com is also a Google certified partner, which means you'll get your website listed on over 1,000 search engines across the internet very quickly. Let iMarketing.com help you get your share of the web today by calling 513-942-7869, or you can email iMarketing.com at sales@i-mktg.com today.
Did you know that memory loss now affects almost 7 million people in America? And the Alzheimer's Research Foundation estimates that by the year 2050, there will be 50 million people with dementia in America. Are you preparing your family, especially your grandchildren, for this issue? This is Dan Perkins, and I'm the author of a new book for children ages 9 to 12 and their families to help them understand that it's not their fault when Grammy can't remember them. Why Can't Grammy Remember Me is available at Amazon or through your local bookseller. Don't make your grandchildren part of the lost generation.
We're back. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Riker on W4CY.
We are back with Alan Topol, best-selling author nationally and probably internationally as well, I know. And he is an award winner from our Let's Just Talk radio show. And his new book is The French Revenge, and we are talking about it right now. Welcome back to our show. After the break, we took a break, and you were talking about the different characters in the book, and that was really quite wonderful, right?
Oh, it was. It was really fun to do. It was fun to do and to put these characters together and create them.
Did you get to go to any of the places that you talk about in this particular novel?
I went to all of them, Catherine, and I enjoyed it enormously. I've taken a number of trips to Paris. I've taken a number of trips to Milan. I have been to Sardinia, and I have been to Corsica. Those are two marvelous islands which are in the Mediterranean, just off the coast of Italy. But those are all fabulous places. And so I've really read with some anguish about how the virus has particularly hit in Italy, because these are wonderful places to visit. And when this stuff clears up, I would heartily encourage any of your listeners to go out and try these places. And I think if they read The French Revenge, they'll get a little bit of a kind of a preview of what the places are like. But these are marvelous places, and, you know, it's just a different part of the world, and it's not away from the sort of hurly-burly and all the activity, and just the beautiful places that have a lot of history. And you know, and that history is fascinating, because take those islands, for example, Corsica and Sardinia. One's now Italian, one's French. But over the years, they kept changing hands, because people were always fighting wars. The Spaniards were fighting with the people from Italy, and the British were fighting, and there were naval wars. And the result, these places changed hands. But when you go and you see their history and you think about it, it gives you a sense of history. And I know you're a student of history too, Catherine, as I am. And so you're fascinated by what happens in the past, because you realize that conflicts in the past have been real, and we haven't invented them in the modern era, unfortunately.
Well, that's so important, because this next book is part of Mary Stuart, Queen Henry VIII's Catholic daughter. And so it goes from one period of time into the present. And it's pretty exciting, because we've been researching the whole thing, and it's really important to get your research right, isn't it?
Oh, it absolutely is. You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's an important point. I mean, once I picked up a book, and it was a novel, and they said the character was in Washington, D.C., and he was going to the State Department, and he got out of a cab on 16th Street. Now, anybody who knows Washington, the State Department's not on 16th Street. But as soon as you read that, it makes the entire book suspect. And so you've got to get your facts right. I mean, and you can't say, gee, you know, who will know? Nobody's been there. Nobody's been to these places. But they do. I mean, if I write about Corsica and I describe what the scene's like at this hotel, Calvi, and Calvi, for example, is somebody, well, if I don't get it right, I will find a reader who will, this only happened once, where somebody came back and they raised a point and said, well, you can't exactly have a view of the castle from that hotel. Well, I don't know. I'm not sure. But the point is, people read it carefully, and you got to get it right. You owe it to your readers to get it
right.
I really think so.
Well, that's the reason why with my next, you know, co-author, she is so historically minded, right, mm-hmm. that everything is perfect on her end, and we go back and forth. And I love it because our friendship from 19, or see, when was I there? I left in 1983, right? And we've been friends and seen each other many, many times since I left. And, you know, I put real stuff in my books, right? The second book.
Oh, absolutely. This, that's right. That's right.
And
you know,
yeah, it's totally important to do that.
It is sometimes important because, for example, I put in the French revenge, and this has to do with General Tyler's reason for revenge. What happened in Europe when the U.S. and Russia were going at each other during the Cold War, which is a part of the background of the story and background of the book, and I've sort of have to get it right because, I mean, over our lifetime since the end of the Second World War, U.S.-Russian relations have been stormy for most of the time. This is an important part of the book, The French Revenge, is U.S.-Russian relations. And there have been a lot of ups and downs, but mostly downs. And I have a Russian president in my book, Volkov, who I will confess is a little like Putin because I tried to model my president on Putin. And we've had stormy relations, the U.S. has. I mean, Putin's a tough character, and it's very hard for the U.S. to deal with him on any kind of a reasonable basis. And so that's really an important part of the French Revenge.
Well, I think that's extremely important because, you know, and I you can look at your characters and you can see today's, what's happening in today's world. Nobody would have ever thought what would happen as far as, you know, what we're going through today. But you know what? What's exciting about your books is that you can't, you're a page, I'm a page turner and you're a page turner. And right, you're just looking for that next exciting thing. And that's, I like your characters because you're very explicit about your characters, okay? And I love that part of it because that holds your audience, right? You have to keep your audience engaged. If they can't, they're going to put the book down.
You're exactly right. I mean, and you can appreciate this because you're writing yourself, and so you're doing the same thing, but ultimately the readers have to get attached to the characters and want to know what happens to them, what happens next. I mean, I create these characters, Anthony Ferrari and Chiara, the piano player, the pianist with whom he's involved. I want to try to get the reader to care about Anthony, to care about Chiara. I want these to be good people so that when the reader turns the pages, he or she is going to say, what's going to happen to Anthony? What's going to happen to Chiara? I hope she's not going to die. I hope they're not going to come and make a second attempt on her life. And so that's part of it. And that's really, you're quite right. At the heart of any successful novel is the ability to get the reader to relate to the character and want to know what it is that's going to happen to the characters next. And that's what you're striving for in your books, and that's what I'm striving for, because that's the key thing.
Right, and I think that's part of it. I mean, I really love books that, you know, that you just can't wait to turn. You want to read the back, the front, and you want to maybe read it one or two times because you love the characters in the book. And that's what I think. Your books are so thrilling, and they keep your, you know, I can't stop reading. I love reading, okay? And I also, I'm going to encourage you in the future to do audiobooks as well if you haven't, because people that are older, a lot of, you know, I'm just going to say this, a lot of people that are older, that maybe their eyesight's gone or whatever, they love to listen, though, if they can. And you really have a good voice yourself, that you could do it. But, you know, I'm doing that with my first book, and I've got a British voice for the other part of my first book, and we're doing it for our second book too, because I know that that's an important part of, you know, because today everybody's in a different you know, venue in a sense. They do everything, if you know what I mean.
Oh, absolutely, right.
So have you thought about it?
Well, I've done one of my books. It was a fun experience, a book called Spy Dance I did on audio. And I loved doing it because the publisher hired a professional actor. And so he would come back to me. They would call me up when they were in the middle of going through and talking about it. How did I pronounce the names of some of the characters in the book? It was great fun to be a part of the process. And a lot of people read it. As you said, there's a big market for audio. Also, a lot of people like to listen while they're driving. So the audio books are fantastic, and I think I have to do more of them. You're very, very wise to do that with your book. I think the whole audio book thing is great. It's a terrific
I'm married, thank God, to an editor who is awesome. He does everything. He's a... You know, and still he works full time. So I don't think you've ever met my husband, but he is a superman. I've been married to him for 50 years, and I have to tell you a little story. No, I better not. I'll tell you later. Okay.
Okay.
But anyhow, what I was going to say is that what I'm excited about is that you are continuing to write, and what I really believe is you will write until you die.
Yep.
And I'm going to do the same thing, because now
absolutely.
I've been promoting authors for years. I don't know if you know that or not. But, and then when you become the author, and this is actually my second book, but mm-hmm. it's in a different venue, right?
Yep.
I think that you never are too old, as long as you can pick up that pencil or that typer or experience it, because it keeps you exciting and alive.
Well, I could not agree with you more, Catherine. I mean, I think you have really nailed it. I mean, you know, you hear about these writers who stop and you say, who have been successful. You know, I don't understand that point. I mean, as long as my mind can keep going and my hands are going to work, I'm like you. I'm going to keep writing novels because it's something I enjoy doing. I enjoy the creative process. I got marvelous feedback on this book, The French Revenge, from a man in Belgium who's the top French diplomat. And
wow.
he read the book and he says, this is fantastic. He comes back to me. And when I get an endorsement like that from somebody who knows, I think, you know, my goodness, it makes the whole process worthwhile. So I'm with you, Catherine.
Okay, yeah. And on that note, guess what? We've run out of time.
Oh, this was terrific today. Thank you very, very much, really. I loved
it. Okay, so do me a favor for my audience. Give the name of the book and your website again, and when they can, and it's in print now, right, or not?
Yes, exactly,
okay.
Yes. It's the name of the book is The French Revenge. My website is www.allantopol.com. They can get the book right now on Amazon, either the paper book or the Kindle book, the electronic. The paper is, I think, about $13, and the electronic, the e-book, is about $3.99. But you can get either one on Amazon. And I hope you'll try it. And I would urge your listeners, if you do, I have a reader mail on my website. I would love to hear from you. There's nothing I like more than getting feedback from readers. So please, I hope you'll read it. And I hope you'll get back to me with comments, please, listeners.
And thank you very much. And thank you very much for joining me today. Stay on for after the show for a minute. And I will say to everyone, don't forget to go to our website at letsjusttalkradio.com. You'll see that we're on so many stations. It's unreal. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we'll see you next time on Catherine Raker's Let's Just Talk.
You've been listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker, sponsored by
Buoyancy PR, Joni Sullivan Baker, Dan Perkins, author, Don Greco, novels, Drop It, Dr. James Butler, smile artist, Thames Chocolates, JMR Productions, Songs and Stories for Soldiers, and Vital, Champions of Liberty.
You're listening to W4CY.